TED Audio Collective.
So today we get to talk about remote work.
Oh, I love remote work.
And I want to propose that we retire the word remote because it's such a bummer of a word.
It is, because it feels awfully remote.
It sounds isolating.
Yeah.
I love the framing of our colleague, Sidhal Neely, who's done so much rigorous thinking and research in this space. This idea that remote work is really about making progress anytime from anywhere. And I think when we frame it that way, it's actually a super aspirational possibility for the how of doing work in a new way.
Beautiful.
All right. Welcome, everyone. I'm Anne Morris. I'm a company builder and leadership coach. I'm here with my wife, Frances.
I'm Frances Fry. I'm a professor at the Harvard Business School.
This is Fixable from the TED Audio Collective. At Fixable, we believe that meaningful change happens quickly. Anything is fixable, and good solutions are often just a single conversation away. Frances, today we got a call from Dean. That's what we're going to call her to protect her privacy. Dean leads a global accounting firm with more than 4,000 employees. And she says the company's struggling, like so many others right now, to find that balance between doing work together, co-located in the office, and doing work offsite. So let's get into it.
Hi, wanted to call in and just tell you a little bit about the problem. And it's really about how we kind of maintain our culture in the firm, and one where people are connected, engaged. And you know, the challenge we have in maintaining that is the balance between an in-person versus a remote culture. Looking forward to some suggestions you might have.
Great. Frances, what's your reaction to Dean's voicemail?
So I think the question of where should work occur is an important question for culture. So I love the question of where and how should we work in order to have highly engaged employees with an awesome culture.
Yeah, I love opening up the framing of the question to how do we solve for engagement?
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
So Dean, welcome to Fixable.
Hi, great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the work you do.
So I run a large practice in advisory services. You know, we work with clients as their trusted advisors, as they are buying or selling companies. In fact, look at it as just being, you know, providing services along the full life cycle of a business, from startup all the way through to an exit of a more mature business.
How long have you been with the firm?
Just over 9 years.
And if you look back on those 9 years, give us a high point for you.
Wow. I think it's my current role that I'm in. I came into this particular role at the onset of COVID, call that about April 2020. So we went through COVID in a very virtual remote environment. The group went from about 140 people when I started to 250 roughly by September last year. And we did our first on-site meeting and brought together the different people. And it was just phenomenal to see.
So what inspired you to give us a call?
prior to COVID, we were in an environment that was a lot more spontaneous, just in terms of how people interact and go into the office. We're national and we labeled as virtual. So while we tag to one of our firm's offices, there's no requirement to be in an office, and the work doesn't necessarily dictate that you're in an office 5 days a week. So people were going into an office. It was more like, well, we're not traveling this week, we'll go into an office, and that it was very social as well. The culture is one where people really care about one another. They help one another. And then COVID comes around and we go virtual, literally like everyone else, in a matter of days. And then you have a whole lot of new people joining the organization. And so the culture started to change. And, you know, there's a component of entry level and younger people joining who aren't as experienced in their career and are looking to more senior people to help them learn. And we're not getting that in the environment. And we hired a lot of people who were hired as really, truly remote workers because they live in a geography where there isn't an office. They want to be working at home. So I think we're coming to a bit of an inflection point because of, you know, what do? We're going to have to do something if we're going to retain the culture, because we're so far from pre-COVID that people have forgotten. We got all these new people, but we want to retain what we had. And it's a real issue for us now.
What do you think is at stake for the business if you don't solve the problem?
It's keeping people engaged and keeping people long-term who want to have a career with us, you know, as opposed to that it's just a stop in their career.
This shift in culture that you've described so beautifully, what's it been like for you personally?
It's a little disheartening because, especially when people leave us, you know, I take it personally. I just, you know, 2021 was the worst year. Like, we had phenomenal growth, financial results, but from a people standpoint, it was the worst. We had the highest amount of attrition. People were hating what they were doing. And it was really tough. And we were growing so much, so our hiring didn't keep up with the needs of the business. So people were just slammed, like, constantly. It's one thing to work for 2 weeks and you're working 80-hour weeks for 2 weeks, but when it becomes week after week after week, it's just way too much. So we have fixed a lot of that in the last year.
How were you able to fix that part of the problem?
We've just hired a lot more people.
I want to invite my esteemed wife in to see if there's any other diagnostic or context questions that you have.
First of all, it makes me really like you that the business performance is at an all-time high and it was the lowest point in your career because of the people. It speaks volumes. When you said that people were hating their job, was it for the reasons of the 80-hour week, or were there other aspects of it that were contributing to that low point in 2021?
So it was the intensity, but it was also the firm had to make some changes through COVID. And I got to be honest, it wasn't all in my control. And sometimes you have to go with the broader organization and what makes sense, even if I didn't agree along the way with many things.
Dean, right now, in this moment, what is most meaningful to you about the work you're doing?
The relationships that I have, both internal and external.
And tell us about the internal relationships. What about those are most valuable to you?
I don't know if I can articulate it with words. It's more feeling and just what happens in your interactions day to day. It's not about what people say. It's just about how they act and the actions. And just seeing my leadership team, the partnership group coming together and really just working together to solve problems in there.
And in this remote environment, how much harder is it for you to get access to that?
You know, I think for people I know and have met with and, you know, have spent a fair amount of time in person, the virtual environment's fine. It's for those that you haven't spent time with in person that it's more challenging.
One last question, and then we're going to get into the solution part of this. Before COVID, you were remote. Is that right?
remote but tied to offices. So people would decide we're going into the office and it was far more social. I think people have got very used to being at home and in their routines. So when we do meet in the office, it's because, oh, we've got a happy hour tonight. We're going out for dinner. We are having some training.
And how frequently is that kind of a thing happening right now?
Maybe every month, something more formal. And then just remember, we've also got people who are not near an office. We try and encourage them to fly in to meet with people that are in an office. But the problem is they fly in and no one's in the office.
No one's neither. There. Yeah.
You know, I've been to the office where I can literally be one of four people on the floor. It's big. We've got 65,000 square foot on one floor in New York City. Can you imagine? You're one of five people in that office.
Yeah, I know.
I don't
need to.
And
then you're all getting on Zoom to talk to other people.
Exactly. My right. My door's shut and I'm busy on Zoom or Teams.
All right, Frances, summarize the challenge.
It's an environment that was happily not office first, so happily remote. An external shock of the tragedy of COVID, which just dislocated people from the office now more in a more permanent way. And now it's a question of how do we maintain the culture? And you had the two aspects of the culture that I adore are caring and helping.
Yeah.
Okay. So anchor days is one aspect where instead of permitting people to come in spontaneously, now that we're on this mostly remote, we have to disturb it to avoid the fact that when we do come in, there's not anyone there, is that there's anchor days and it might be 5 days a month. It might be 1 day a week. It might be 1 week, a quarter, but whatever it is, that there are anchor days, not an anchor event, but anchor days that have it and that people can plan for. So that they're there, but also so that we can plan activities so they're not doing what you just said, is which is we all go into our individual isolation chambers and talk remotely. So I suspect you have thought about this, and I would like to know, how did that go with you? You discarded it for this reason. You've adopted it in part for that reason.
So I think it goes down to flexibility and making sure that people can be flexible and empowered to make some of their own decisions.
I think people will. The challenge is that they won't all be doing them in simultaneity with each other. So the reason you do need, I think, to impose some coordination is because the chance of all of us, even if it would just require a small adjustment for me, I wouldn't know to make it without a coordination. And because it's the interconnective tissue that matters, I think you are going to have to coordinate and probably come to terms with that's not taking away flexibility. It's actually adding something lovely. Now, when we're doing that, we know a couple of things. Have amazing food at the office for the anchor days, like amazing food. I would have amazing education on the days that people come in. And then I would also have amazing social. And it sounds like you've been doing it for social, and that's good, but probably not purposeful enough to pull enough people off of their routine. So my first thought is you're being a little bit more presumptuous about the role of coordination, not as a detraction, but as a proactive development opportunity.
I like that.
And where I like where you're going there, Frances, is this idea that, because for sure, Dean, what you articulated, that people are losing something in a world where we are mandating or strongly encouraging people come in on specific days, whatever that number ends up being. You are taking away some amount of agency and flexibility. And one of the key lessons, I think, of the experiment that we ran in remote work over the past 2 years is how much people really do value that agency and flexibility. I think particularly people who are drawn to the industry that you're in. So if you're going to take a little bit of that away, what are you explicitly giving in return? And Frances, the two buckets that I think are important that you just added, there's developmental. So what, like training opportunities, and then there's coordination. when I show up at the office, what can we do on the management side to create the conditions where that collaboration can happen? For sure, letting people go into their offices and get on a Teams call is not going to do it. So what would it look like given the nature of the work?
And then two other things to add to that. One is I would put as many wheels as possible on the furniture in the office. Because what's the chance that it's the right setup for this new way we want to? I'm going to just guess it's 0% chance.
You're 100% right.
And then, I was speaking recently about somebody who was having a lot of success bringing people into the office for these anchor days. And they put a really creative group of people on the team together to think, what could be anchor events on the anchor days? One of the ones that has been most deliciously received is having Peloton instructors come in.
Wow, okay.
So, Peloton instructors, it turns out the best Peloton instructors know how to captivate untold numbers of people. And you don't have to bring in the Peloton bikes because they can do stuff when you're standing. And it can be exercise, it can be motivational. But I would have anchor events on the anchor days, and they don't all have to come from you. In fact, I would have them be surfaced by folks. In fact, I would ask people, what would make you want to fly in?
So how many those anchor days? Did you study like the cadence and what works versus what doesn't?
So I would ask you, how often will people need to be physically around each other to activate caring and helping one another? Like, what does your instinct tell you?
Probably 2 days a week.
My sense is that's a lot. But I like it being consecutive. And so I would maybe, if you think that's right, I would maybe think 3 days every other week.
Yeah, or 2 days every other week, and you can ramp it up over time once people get, realize the benefits and are enjoying it.
Really what you're solving for here is engagement. You're not trying to solve for office work per se, but you have a strong working hypothesis that there's some relationship there. I wonder if there is a high engagement way to solve this problem. For example, putting together an engagement committee that involves like some of the highest potential people on the team or the people best suited to think about this problem. And, make it a committee, make it a working group.
I think that's all great. No, I do. And I think it's better that it's not me that's driving this, that it does come from the team. When it's pushed down from leadership, it's never the right way to do it.
And let's do it in a way that actively models the behavior that you are trying to cultivate, which is that people are in this, they're committed, they're creative, they're engaged.
All right, it's time to take a break. We'll be back with Dean right after this.
Dean, where's your head?
How long do you anticipate the anchor days and this? Is this like forever now, or do you see that it comes back to something?
This is an idea that our friend and colleague Sadal Neely has really, in her book Remote Work Revolution, really tried to get people to understand that the office is a tool. If you're a person to like a personal business and a relationship business, I think it's a forever, because this is going to be the new normal.
But let me complicate that a little bit. Hopefully this is a reason to be optimistic. We're never going back to the world that we inhabited.
Not with the best people.
But what we're experiencing right now is not what the future of work is going to feel like. Because what we're experiencing right now is what remote work felt like when our primary job was to survive a pandemic. That's what we've just done. And we are still primarily working with those assumptions. But the new world of work that we're going to inhabit is not going to be organized around surviving a pandemic. It's going to be organizing around how do we design work to achieve whatever mission we came to do? And how do we do it without the limits of space and time? And Dean, if I were coaching you,
she's the best coach in the world.
The intervention I would be doing on you is that you don't need to do this alone. In fact, you don't need to do the practice of leadership alone anymore. It's not a solo sport.
Yeah, leadership, it's a lonely place, though. I was saying to someone last week, being a leader can be a very lonely place.
So the question is, how do you make it less lonely? I suspect you have made choices that make it more lonely than it needs to be. And on the other side of different choices, you're going to get some of that energy and joy back, that time and space back to live the life and do the work that you want to do right now. Tell us where your head is now, what you're thinking.
I'm feeling quite energized from the call. The first action is I'm going to go and form this committee. The challenge is going to be in who should be on the committee.
It's also like that giving us advice, and maybe that has worked well. I have seen that take a dark turn in some organizations. But what's different about this one is this is a committee that's going to do things. So they can come and ask you for help, but they're the doers. They're not the advisor to the doers. It's a very different thing.
You know, with these kinds of committees, I like bringing some lightness and joy, even in somewhat serious organizational cultures. How do we make this a company or a team where people jump out of bed and want to work for, you know, like bring a little bit of lightness to the mandate, but signal this is a real problem that we need to solve as a company. We don't know how to solve it. And that's why we need your help.
And you're applying to be part of a working group.
Working group, yes.
Not an advisory group.
Yeah. Give them the mandate and the budget to run some experiments.
Yeah.
And we want to use the word experiment and pilot and all of those
removes
words that
all
signal
the pressure.
That like we're here to try things. And the only way we're going to get to the answer and find our way through this maze is to try, fail, get smarter as we go.
And what's the good size?
So this is on behalf of 200 people, did you say?
300 300.
About 300. And next year it's going to be?
Oh, God, I hope it's 400.
400.
I think you just want to optimize for the size of effective teams, which is somewhere in the
8 to 12
zone. Maybe you can throw on a couple on the edge because not everyone's going to come to every, you know, like, but I wouldn't go over 15.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Dean, it was so fun to get in the sandbox with you, and we hope you do come back and tell us how it all went.
And we want to share, I'd love to share in the learnings. I think you're going to learn some pretty cool things about how to do this in your particular context. And we would love to learn alongside of you with that too.
I look forward to it. So thank you both for your time today.
All right, Francis, what'd you think?
So most of the time when I think about people battling with remote work, it's not as optimistic as this call was. This call was enormously optimistic. It's not trying to go backwards.
Right.
Somehow it's going forwards. I think they're also going to learn how to do it in a sustainable way. So I am super energized by what might happen. Mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I see organizations still stuck on is, oh, we tried that remote work thing, you know.
You like, tried a remote work experiment.
There's a super exciting, I mean, to your optimism point, there's a super exciting part of the challenge in front of us, but we are bringing a lot of the baggage of surviving a pandemic into that challenge. One of the exciting assumptions in this world we're building that is distinct from the world we're leaving is that we actually can come together.
Yeah.
Now the question is, well,
for
why?
What?
Why do we come together and to do what and under what circumstances and what kind of snacks do we have? And really, I mean, I think we're at the very beginning of solving this problem and dwelling in the possibility
and dwelling
here.
Dwelling in the possibility.
Most organizations, in my experience, are starting with the snacks question.
Which is not a bad place to
listen,
start.
No judgment. Get the snacks right. But to your point, you know, what purposeful work are we going to do together when we are now deciding very strategically to cohabitate for these specific days or times, I think is the most important question. And in many experiments right now, that is an unanswered one.
I want people to be able to talk about what they did on their anchor days with their peers. Like, I want that to be like, oh my gosh, do you know what we got to do? I want it to feel like that. I want it to feel nourishing. So it's a pull, not a push. And I watch organizations that think they have leverage, and so they get a little draconian. It is not going to help them in the end.
Yeah.
Like, create it so that people want to come. Don't say you have to come. Create it so that they want to. And I think it's going to be magnificent. I really look forward to learning what her team comes up with.
Yeah, me too. All right, everyone, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Come back next time. We like to fix things at Fixable. If you want to join us, we would be delighted to have you on the show. Email us at fixable@ted.com or call us at 234-FIXABLE, 234-349-2253.
Fixable is brought to you by the TED Audio Collective. It's hosted by me, Frances Fry.
Oh, you nailed it, baby. You really nailed it. And me, Anne Morris. This episode was produced by Camille Peterson. Our team includes Isabel Carter, Constanza Gallardo, Lydia Jean Cott, Sarah Nix, Jimmy Gutierrez, Michelle Quint, Corey Hagem, Alejandra Salazar, Ban Ban Chang, and Roxanne Highlash. Jake Gorski is our mix engineer. We'll be bringing you new episodes of Fixable every week, so make sure to follow the show, subscribe, wherever you get your podcasts. When you follow a show, the episodes are automatically downloaded and ready to go whenever you're ready to listen.
I hope you heard that, Mom. One more thing. If you can, please take a moment to leave us a review. We love hearing from our listeners. See you soon.
Good reviews, please. leave us a good review.